judgmental institution, looking out through these iron bars. How could he put me in here? How could he go that far? Yes, I need help, but not this kind. He didn't love me from the start. But it's not my mind that's broken, it's my heart. Oh, Daddy, come and get me and take me home with you. I'm depending on you, Daddy. There's nothing I can do. And you said that I could come to you if I ever was in need. But Daddy, I can't come to you. You'll have to come to me. When he said he loved another, I was crazy with jealousy. That's 'cause I was crazy over him, and I couldn't stand to set him free. And I couldn't stand to lose him, and I cried and cried for days. And he said that I was crazy, but he just put me in here to get me out of his way. Daddy, come and get me. You. I'm depending on you, Daddy, 'cause there's nothing else I can do. And you said that I could come to you if I ever was in need. But Daddy, I can't come to you. You'll have to come to me.
Dolly Parton there, getting us started, and we'll send that one out to Terry Crowell, who has been wanting to hear that for a long time, and we apologize for the delay there, Terry, and also apologize for the somewhat sloppy recording. That's the only copy of that we happen to have in the library here. We'll have to remedy that one of these days. Daddy, come and get me there from Dolly. And hello, everyone, and welcome in to the Listener's Choice section, edition number 30. I'm Roger Smith, as most of you know by now, and you can get us for requests or change of address or whatever you need two or three ways. This tape, first of all, is coming from 115 North Keats, that's Keats Avenue, Louisville, Kentucky. The zip is 40206, and you can certainly put a message at the beginning of the tape when you send it back. Make sure it is at the beginning of side one and get in your request or whatever. Or you can send me an email. That's the easiest way that a lot of people do. And that email address is snakeguy@bellsouth.net. And you can also reach us by voicemail at 773-572-7899. That's 773-572-7899. That's my Fillmore box, and if you're on the Fillmore system, we will be glad to reply to your voicemail. If you're not on the Fillmore system, just leave us a message on the voicemail, and we'll take care of the situation, whether it be a request or we won't reply to you. We don't return phone calls, but we will take care of the situation, whether it be a request that you have or change of address or just whatever you need there. We'll certainly try to take care of it. This edition 30 is, I started to say a bit late. Actually, it's quite a bit late. And the next one may be as well. The reason for this one is we've been trying to get Maryland's Rockin' Around the Track mag out. And for those of you who get that, we usually send them together. If it's in the box, you know we got it out. If not, then you know that we didn't, and it will come shortly thereafter when you send this listener's choice box back. The edition number 31 that comes out in April could also be somewhat late, because on April 5th, Marilyn is going into the hospital for a hip replacement, and we don't think that the recovery will take too long. We've been assured that the recovery won't take too long, but you know, you never know until you've kind of been there and done that. So we'll just see how that goes, and if we're late for the edition number 31, you'll understand why. Well, in this particular edition, we're going to start something different, and we're going to start it right now, just as soon as I get through yakking. For Christmas this year, I was given a copy of the Emery's Memories box set. This is a box of interviews from or with about 130 artists from Ralph Emery, and it's contained in 46, count them, 46 CDs. And we're going to feature some of those interviews here on the Listener's Choice magazine. We're going to feature some of the shorter ones. Some of them aren't too short, but some of them are just too long to feature. I really can't do it that easily unless I cut them. But we're going to feature them. We're not going to do it every time, because it does cut way back on the music, but we're going to do it from time to time. We won't be doing it next time, because the April edition, of course, is the favorites, our favorites edition. But we're going to start out in this issue, and we're going to have an interview with Theron Young, as done by Ralph Emery. I think it's a good interview. I think you'll enjoy it. So without further ado, here are Ralph and Theron, and I will see you in about 29 minutes or something like that. Here, Ralph and Theron.
My guest is Theron Young. Theron, right away, I've got to ask you. Maybe a lot of your fans don't know yet, but I'm sure some of them do if you've been working the stages. Why do you wear a ring in your ear?
I really put this thing on as a dare. Another guy and I did it together. I was down in Dallas at the time working a home show, and they had a stand over where they put earrings in.
Is your ear pierced?
Yeah, yeah. And so they have a little gun that is shoot it in there. And I thought it was going to kill me, you know. And I didn't know it was in there yet. And this other guy, we bet $1,000 between each other who'd be the first one to take it out. Well, his ear swole up like a head of lettuce. I mean, he was the most pitiful looking thing. And mine never has hurt. And I was just afraid he'd get blood poisoning near to your brain, kill him, you know, because he'd have died before he pulled it out. And I let him out of the bed. He pulled it out of his ear, and his ear looked like, well, I can't even talk. His ear looked like a balloon going down. You know, but people got just laughing at me about mine, so I took it over and had a diamond one made up and stuck it in there. They asked me what it was for.
That's very pretty. Look awful good on Hilda.
Oh, I bought her a set of them for her anniversary.
Just like that?
Yeah. I just wear one, see, because I figured if you wore two, I mean, strange enough with one. If I wore two, I'd have to carry a purse, you know. But I got a Hilda set of them.
How long are you going to wear that thing?
I've had it in there about 5 months. Well, it's there now. You know, why take it out? I got a lot of publicity out of it. People ask me why I put it in. I didn't tell them about the bet. I told them I'd quit drinking, and I put that in there to keep me from drinking anymore.
I saw that story in the paper.
Yeah, turned it three times. I said it hurts so bad you forget what you want. So, but it's really not an acupuncture. No, it's just like an earring. They put an acupuncture up in your ear up in there somewhere. A staple.
Yeah, I've seen that. We had a guest that had one.
Tommy has one in his ear to help lose weight.
I think Dick Feller, when he was on the show, he had a device like that in his ear.
I don't believe in it, but you know, I believe you won't. Drink, you'll drink. If you don't, you won't. I don't think something was ever sticking it. Somebody said, stick it in your ear. See, stick the bottle in your ear.
All right. Tell me about this song right here. Here I am in Dallas.
I'm going to tell you about this song. When I recorded, I had a couple of ballads. You know, as a rule, most of the records I put out get in the top 10 somewhere. I've had about 70 of them so far. But I went there for about three good ballads that I thought were terrific ballad songs, and they didn't get maybe number 18, number 20. And I figured, well, evidently they're going to buy me on a ballot for a while, so I put out this piece of junk, is what I really called it. And the thing caught on. I was never expecting it. I had a ballot on the other side that I was relying on just in case. But this thing caught on.
I think one thing that helps sell the record here is the arrangement somebody has worked out with the band.
Well, that came off of the dub. Lamar Morris wrote it, and we just kind of copied his dub. One of the few dubs that I do copy, I usually try to go in and rearrange everything. But we stayed pretty much with his pattern on it.
But this is a terrific arrangement, and old Farron has struck again.
Well, it's different, and I've had two or three stations that won't play it because of the word in it. But then I hear a lot of songs on the market that a whole lot, I'm not going to name none of them, but the people I didn't know what I'm talking about, a lot worse than this song could ever be. And because I say hell in it twice. And if people knew me very well, they'd know that was very, very mild for me. If they could only hear what we do on them sessions that don't get to come out, they'd think, boy, that's good.
Sheriff, in reviewing your career all these years, well, I was curious as to when you made your first record.
I made the first one back around 1950 on a label called Gotham Records, and they put Tillman Frank's name on it. I did singing, and they said Tillman Frank's was singing.
Oh, I've got a copy of that record.
It did pretty good out in Texas. In fact, Tillman got some call for show dates on it. But of course, he couldn't sing, so he told him he had a sore throat or some reason, and he wouldn't accept the dates. Then later on, I recorded for Capitol, and the first big thing that I came up here on was Have I Waited Too Long and Tattletale Tears.
Yeah, I remember that.
It brought me to the opera, and then the next record I cut was Going Steady.
Farron, did you ever tell a lie?
Oh, yeah. Huh? Sure, I lie all the time.
You do?
If it's worth it, don't you?
No, especially.
No. I'm not a liar or a cheater or a thief, but I think anybody tells lies that keep down trouble and things.
Oh, I see what you do.
But a barefaced lie, I don't tell.
A barefaced lie, you don't tell. Normally, you're very candid with people. You tell them just what you think.
Just what I think, yeah. But, I mean, you know, there's times that I have to lie to my wife of 22 years or shoot to my wife of 2 months. You know, you got to do it.
You believe, then, in the little white lie?
I definitely believe if you can stop a lot of things, tell it.
You may stop a lot of trouble.
I'm not saying Watergate the thing. I'm just saying, you know, irrigate it a little bit.
I want to ask you, is it true one time you told your band, don't try to live like I do, you can't afford it?
That's right. I tell a lot of people that. I said, that's like my sons, you know. They want to come around and say, Daddy, how can I make the kind of money you do? I said, rob banks. You know, I tried to get you to, like my oldest boy, he's a welder now. I tried to get him to be in the music business. Well, he just wouldn't hear to it at all.
How old is he now?
He's 20, 21.
It's really strange that those two little boys have grown up. How old's the other one?
The other one's 18.
What's he doing?
He just graduated from high school. I got him working down there in the building right now. He don't do too much. Now, he took after his mother. When it comes not to want to do anything, that's her side of the family.
But the older one is welding?
Yeah, he works, and he's a good worker, but Robin is just the opposite.
Now, is Damon?
Damien, uh-huh.
And Robin?
Robin. Robin won't, like every time I walk in the building, he'll have a Coke or be standing there with a cigarette, and he'll see me come, he'll grab a broom or something. I said, why is it every time I walk up, you automatically just starting to work? As soon as I leave, he quits.
That's so you won't lay him off.
Yeah. Well, it was cheaper to hire him because, you know, he was sitting at the house eating up all the groceries, so I thought I'd bring him up there, and he'd been wanting to move out and get in an apartment, so I told him I'd pay part of it because it would really be cheaper on me if he'd move out. But I can't get the kid out of the house. You know.
You're trying to kick him out of the nest?
Well, one of these days he'll go to work and we'll move.
And not tell him where you moved?
Not tell him nothing.
Farron, how much of the Music City News are you into?
Well, I started it, and I own the biggest part of it. I've sold a portion of it to a multimedia, a big company that owns about 20 other newspapers. And I started, 10, 12 years ago now. And I have yet to take a dime from Music City News. I never took a penny, a postage stamp out of it. And the reason I started was we had several, you know, country journals started, and then they went broke, went out of business, and no support. And this thing liked to put me in the poorhouse, really, when I first started, because that was costing me, you know, $3,000 to $4,000 a month. I'd write out of my pocket for payroll and getting it printed and getting mail. And finally, it started making its own, and it makes money now. It does very well, but myself and the other owners take no money from Music City News. Everything that is made goes back into the paper to make it a better paper.
Just let it grow. Your partner has a lot of newspapers, don't they?
Oh, yeah, they got 20-something newspapers and about 5 or 6 television stations and 5 or 6 radio stations.
Do you ever get involved in editorial policy or anything in the paper?
The only thing I ever do is go to the board meetings. I'm still the president of it, and we see how much money we made, and outside of that, I let Betty Cox and them run that thing.
How about when you have an ad in there with your picture?
I pay.
You pay?
In fact, I don't even get a discount. They'll run specials and they won't let me in on them. Most people don't believe it. When I started the paper, a lot of the artists thought, well, yeah, he owns it, so naturally. So if you'll ever notice, I keep very little of me in that paper. I tell my writers not to mention me that much in that paper because I don't want nobody to think because I own it, you know, they can put anything I want in there. So the two or three stories I've had, they made me put them in there, really.
Farron, I want to talk about Little Farron for a moment. Occasionally I'll ask you to repeat a story. This is about young Farron. You told me an interesting story one time about Hank Williams being up on a balcony, and you were a young, smart kid, and you were yelling up at him.
No, not really. I kind of dug him out. We were just out one night riding around like the teenagers you see on Happy Days on TV nowadays, you know. And Hank was sitting up on his stoop behind the Louisiana Hayride, and I just hollered. I said, "Hey, Hank." He said, "What do you want, boy?" I said, "I'm going to be up on that stage with you one of these days." He said, "I hope you do, boy." And that was like the Lord answering me up there, you know. And about a year later, I came to the opera, and Hank was up there at the opera, and I went on stage and sang. When I came off, he came over and got me by the shoulder because he didn't remember me. He said, "You're going to make it in this business, boy. You've got what it takes to make it." I said, "Did you remember that time?" And he remembered it. He said, "Yeah, so you were them punks that came up here hollering at me."
Was he one of your idols, Farron?
Yes, definitely.
Did you ever try to sing like him?
Yes, sir. I darn sure did. Him and Eddie Arnold and George Morgan.
Did you?
And Nat King Cole.
Did you have to?
I liked Blacks before Charlie Pride. Just to prove it to you.
Did you have to be careful not to copy him when you made records?
Well, I did copy him. Really Going Steady sounds a whole lot like Hank. In fact, they thought Hank had written the song, but he didn't. But I was singing like him. I think everybody starts. You start walking by watching somebody walk. You learn how to talk by imitation. So everybody learned. You know, George Jones used to sing a whole lot like him. And look at the guys that tried to sing like Eddie Arnold. Look at the guys trying to sing like Ray Price. But I finally ended up with a definite style of my own by getting Arnold and Morgan and all these guys together on records.
What do you tell people when they come up and say, "We got an old boy over here in the next town that sounds just like so-and-so," and they'll mention some big star?
Yeah.
What do you tell them?
I tell them to go see that guy, that big star. So we got a guy over here who sings just like Johnny Cash. I said, "You ought to tell him to go see Johnny Cash, because he's looking for another singer." What gets me is they come up and say, "I got to go over and sing just like you." I said, "Really?" They said, "Yeah, in fact, he sings better than you do." I don't doubt that at all.
Let me bring out Ronnie Millsap. You like Ronnie Millsap records?
Ronnie Millsap was one of my buddies. You know, I didn't know Ronnie was blind. And when he was working the roof up there at the Roger Miller's place.
The King of the Road.
Yeah. Well, I came by and I waved at him. I was dancing. And I waved up on the stage. Well, he just had them glasses on. I didn't know he was blind.
And he didn't wave back.
He didn't wave back. And I figured, well, that guy's awful conceited. And I went over and sat down. Well, somebody went over and told him, said, "Farron's in the audience," and said he's got on a pair of blue slacks and a dark blue coat. And then he come on, he said, "Farron Young's here, ladies and gentlemen. He's sitting right over there with a dark blue coat and light blue pants." I said, "I told you that guy wouldn't." See, they told me then, said he ain't blind. I mean, they said he was blind. And I said, "Oh, no, he ain't. He's just stuck up." And so when he called off the colors to my suit, I said, "See, I told you that guy ain't blind." And he got the biggest kick in the world out of it. He really got to me.
My guest is Farron Young. Farron, you always wanted to be a singer when you were a kid?
Well, I first wanted to be a radio announcer, a sports announcer. I really,
really?
Did, yeah. And then I started singing. I sang all my life, even when I was in school. I sang pop music up to about my senior year of high school.
Did you ever get in close to the announcing?
Well, I was a disc jockey at KWKH.
Did you ever do any play-by-play?
No. I don't think I could have done it. It was just something I used to get out and get a tin can, you know, and say, "All right, now he's on third base, and here comes the strike," and you know, I just make up games in my little head. I thought someday I'd want to be. We had a baseball team called the Shreveport Sports.
I remember that. They were in the Texas League, right?
Right, Texas League. And I used to go to ball games, and then I'd listen to them on the radio, and I just thought that's what I'd like to be.
What do you mean you were a pop singer?
I never sang country music until I was right at about a senior in high school. I just sang pop music. I worked with combos, things around in clubs.
Now, is this the same young man we're talking about that yelled up at Hank Williams that he was going to be up there with him?
That was my senior year of high school when I just started singing country, and Hank was the one who kind of influenced me because I started listening to him. And I went out to Hayride one time and saw him. In fact, I climbed in a window. I didn't have the admission ticket. I snuck in. After even nowadays, when I see kids sneaking into my show, I let them in, because I did that once.
Apparently, he converted you over to country music then.
Well, by listening to him, it just did something. He went out and sang the Lovesick Blues in encore 10 times. And well, I'd been working out in these pop clubs, you know, they come up and give you a quarter and tell you to sing 10 songs for the quarter. So I went out to a country place and sang a song. Guy gave me $5 bill. It didn't take me long to figure which way I was going to hit.
You sing a lot of what?
I did Sinatra. And
no, I meant, did you work high school dances or Teen Town Hops?
Oh, yeah. We had a Saturday night little deal there, where, like a talent show, and we was on every week. And then went around. I sang at all the assemblies. No, I was in all the school plays. Every year it was a musical, and I was a star of the musical. And then I sang with some combos right around Shreveport and Bossier City.
I see. What role did you play in those musicals, Farron?
I just sang. We had some minstrels, but I just sang things like, I can't even think of them.
Anything that would come along involving singing, you'd jump at it then?
Yeah, because I always loved it, and it was just my way of communicating. Because I was so mean in school. If I hadn't been a singer, they'd kick me out of school. That's the only thing that saved me.
You
really
get in a lot of fights?
Continuously in a fight.
Why? Mad at somebody?
I didn't have to really be mad. They just put me up to it. You know, when I was in grammar school, I whipped everybody. And when I got into high school, I never did grow no more. You know, and them other guys kept growing. And this one guy, I was playing football, and he came over, and he was about 6'4" then. And he said, Farron, said, you remember that time you whipped me over at Juella School and put my head in a commode and flushed it? I said, yeah, I remember that. He said, do you think you could do it again? I said, no, sir, I certainly don't. I knew he was waiting to hit me right then, but he didn't.
All
lucky,
right.
Lucky for me.
Yeah, you know what? The Lord protects you.
He's
gotten you out of a lot of scrapes, hasn't he?
Well, the devil's got me into a lot of them, too.
I've heard a lot of people say that. Lord must look after Farron.
I think he does. Well, he looks after everybody. But like I say, the devil's gotten me into a lot of it, too.
Farron, this was the biggest record that you've ever had, wasn't it?
Right. 1960 and 61. Willie Nelson brought me this song. Down at Toots' Orchid Lounge.
Which is a local pub.
Right. And he'd carried the song to everybody in the music business. Nobody would record it. He brought me this and another tune called Congratulations, and I recorded them and put them out back-to-back.
Did he tell you everybody turned it down?
Yeah, yeah. In fact, he was pitching me Congratulations, and then he sang Hello All, and I said, that's a better song.
My guest is Farron Young, and we've mentioned earlier that he plays golf. I want to see you say Inverary.
Inverary.
Very good, Farron.
That's right out of Fort Lauderhill. It is, not Lauderdale, Lauderhill.
Lauderhill? Uh-huh. Didn't you play there in the Jackie Gleason?
I've been down there 3 years in a row with Jackie. He's quite a guy. I was down there this last year, and I had the president, Ford, came. That's really a mess. You know, when a president comes around like that, it's a mess, because all the Secret Service people and all, and you just can't hardly move. There's a guy standing on every building. And I know they had like 100 golf carts. Well, each I was down for practice day, so I give this guy $50 tip every day, make sure I had a golf cart. And the day the president came to play, the Secret Service guys took all the golf carts, and I was the only one that had one. And Peter Marshall and Robert Stack and all them big movie stars went over, and I don't know how I got that cart.
You mean they had all the stars walking?
Yeah, they all had to walk because the Secret Service took them.
I presume that the president played with Jackie Gleason.
Oh, yeah, he played with Jackie Gleason and Jack Nicklaus and Bob Hope. I was standing out there on the driving range with Tommy Aaron and Miller Barber, and some of us hitting balls, and this Secret Service guy came out there and said, Mr. Barber, will you be through in a minute? Yeah, we appreciate it when you do, if you step back. Mr. Aaron, yes, I'll be through in a minute. And he said, and you? I said, who are you talking? He says, you, move out. I ain't got to tell you what I told him. But I stayed right there after I had my few choice words to tell him that I was going to hit the rest of the bucket of balls I had.
Why were they moving you out?
Because the president and Bob and Jackie was coming out, and they were wanting a spot for them to hit some practice balls.
Oh, I see. Day.
So I just keep hitting my ball, and I looked around. Here they come, the president with all them guards around and all. And he put the president right over next to me, and then Bob Hope. And I got through hitting my balls, and I moved.
Are you and Jackie Gleason good friends?
Well, I can't say I'm a good friend of his because I don't know him that well. I talked to him down there, and he's been a very nice guy to me. And the way I got in there was, you know, Jackie listens to a country music station down there, and he had been listening to 4 in the morning. And of course, he and I were on Capitol Records for years together, and he sees my picture in the Capitol Record Club and things like that. So he knows who I am, I'll put it that way. But no, I mean, he had invited me over to his house for dinner.
How's your little girl?
She's doing fine, Raph. She started school this year and made me cry.
Her name is Alana?
Alana.
Alana?
Alana Denise, 6 years old.
Wasn't she sick at one time?
She has a bad heart now. She was born with a bad heart, and they haven't there. We took her off the medicines and all, and you wouldn't know anything was wrong with looking at it. It's a little tiny heart hole, but it makes a lot of noise. But the doctor said that's good, because if it was a bigger hole, it would make less noise.
She has a tiny hole in her heart?
Yeah. Yeah, but she really is truly my piece of heaven, this little gal. And I did this song just for her.
Did you cry when she went to school?
Yes, sir, I did. Yes, sir, I did. And I did a lot of crying and praying when she was born, too, and they took her away from us with that bad heart and put her in intensive care, you know. Sometimes you get to thinking you're mean and tough. I can tell you, boy, you can get on your knees real quick when you get a situation like that going.
Yeah, I imagine she's got daddy wrapped around her little finger then.
She gets about anything she wants. I told you one time she's the only kid in town with a Rolls Royce limousine and a chauffeur.
Farron, who's been all over the world and had 14 careers in his young life. How old are you, Farron?
43.
You,
No one believes that when I tell them I'm 43, because they think I'm older. Because it's like my 24th year in the business, see, since I had my first hit record.
Well, you're fortunate, too, because you've had hit records all those years. A lot of people that had hit records back in the 50s when you started don't have them anymore.
Well, they're not around, a lot of them. That's true. I have been very lucky. One thing I've done, though, I work at this as a business. I try to keep up with the times, you know, from way back, like this song, Live Fast, Love Hard, and Die Young. Well, the times have changed, the sounds have changed. I've tried it. My new songs are different than the old songs.
Well, I tried to make this show a blend of the old and the new, since you've had so many hits. This is from the 50s era, isn't it?
This was a tune that I detested. Ken Nelson made me record this song. He was my A&R man back then. I put it out, and it was a big, big hit. And then I got to liking it. Especially when the check came in, yeah.
You did another one long by that time, a lot like this one, I thought. I've got $5, and it's Saturday night.
Hey, I got $5 there, and I live fast, love hard, and if you ain't loving, you ain't living.
Yeah, yeah.
Pretty much the same way.
And let me see. Well, later on, every time I'm kissing you,
I
think of you kissing him.
I miss you already, and
yeah, that's the one I was trying to think of. I miss you already, and you're not even gone.
Country girl, the yellow bandana. Boy, I can go on with
my 70 top 10 records in a career spanning 24 years.
About 3 a year.
That's not too bad.
No, I hope I can just have that many more in the next 24 years.
You got in the business.
But you know what I do? Like I said, people don't believe my age. I tell them I'm 43. They'll say, how many more? So I have a new thing now. When they ask me, I feel I might as well get a compliment out of it. Otherwise, they're going to call me a liar anyway. They say, how old are you? And I say, I'll be 59 my next birthday. And they say, damn, you look good for your age.
Farron, here in my notes about you.
You ain't got enough paper to write down everything about me.
I got a lot of notes on you. You said you sold fertilizer. Did you sell fertilizer?
Yes, I used to be one of them. I still think I'm doing a pretty good job at selling it, Ralph. So are you, come to think about it. Yeah, I was called a little fertilizer boy. I had an old truck my daddy had discarded, and I finally got it to working. In fact, I went and worked part-time in a junkyard get the extra parts, get the old truck running. And, you know, back then, you'd sell a whole truckload of barnyard fertilizer, you get $5. Now they'd sell you a little bitty bag of it for that. I've been thinking about going back in the business again.
Well, did you get to keep all the money? Were you in business for yourself?
Oh, I was the contractor. Yes, sir. You know, and I even bought me another little car on the side, see? And one day we were out, and we had this other boy work for him. I'd pay him like $1. You know, I was the boss. Who was the head man around the fertilizer business? I was about 16.
What other kind of jobs did you have?
I worked
before you got to the singing.
I worked as an upholsterer in an upholstery shop, putting on seat covers. Worked in a paint and body shop doing the sanding and the cleanup. And what else? I used to sell aluminum awnings and screens, and also help make them in a factory.
All this while you were a teenager,
right? During my summer times.
You had a lot of jobs.
I used to make a lot of money selling the fertilizer. I ain't kidding. You know,
you'd do anything to get off that farm, wouldn't you?
Well, I was still on the farm, but I worked during the day, you know, because we had to milk cows twice a day, and then during the day, during the summer, that's when I'd sell the fertilizer. I know me and Sonny went out and sold fertilizer all day and made about $50. And that was a lot of money back then. Then we went and got my little car, and we had a date with these two good-looking girls. Well, of course, we didn't tell them that we were fertilizer salesmen. We were trying to make them think we were some big shots. So we went over to one of the finest steakhouses in town, trying to impress these girls. They're from the other side of town, see. Sonny had met them. It was a blind date to me. And there we are sitting there ordering this steak, and here come this man and woman in it. We had sold a load of fertilizer, too. And I knew it was coming. She walked over to the table, and I was being Sonny Bope, was trying to get under it. So she said, "Oh, look, honey, there's the little fertilizer boys." Them girls looked at each other. Boy, that was embarrassing to us. What did y'all really do? So we had to admit out, red out on ourselves.
Farron, who was the Sonny? Was he a buddy of yours?
Yeah, Sonny Hearn.
Well, do you have any brothers?
I have two brothers. I have a brother. Two brothers older than I am.
You have any sisters?
Two sisters.
All living?
And I'm the baby, huh?
Oh, are you?
I was the baby.
You the baby?
I was the little baby.
Were you spoiled?
No way.
Huh?
You didn't get spoiled around my house, friend. No way. I stayed there, you know, long enough. All the rest of them was gone. I was still there milking them cows.
Little brother.
But you know what happens to you in a poor family. You got all the hand-me-downs. It didn't bother me so much. I got my brother's shoes were too big, but it was wearing my sister's dresses at school and killed you. I mean, every time I get a record against the charge, I'm amazed at myself. Because, you know, it amazes me to see people line up in the auditorium, pay their hard-earned money to come in and listen to me sing. I've never got over that thought. It amazes me.
That people would pay to see you sing?
Right.
Haven't you learned that you're a star yet?
I don't believe there's no such thing as a star, but I believe that you owe somebody, if they do pay to come see you, you owe them a good job, because it's their money. They worked at a job somewhere to get that money to see you do your job, and I think you owe them that much.
Farron, would you like to be in the Hall of Fame?
Well, no time soon. I don't think I'm ready for it yet. That kind of scares me to get in that thing.
Now, that may sound like a dumb question. I suppose everybody would like to be in the Hall of Fame, but I feel sure that one day your turn's going to come.
Well, I think what scares anybody about a Hall of Fame, they usually put you in there just before you die, right after you did, so I wouldn't know big hurry to get in it.
You know David Allan Coe?
Yes, I do. He is quite a character. You know that? Did you read the story on him the other day?
I have. I used to interview David in the early years he came to Nashville. He would come and sit with me.
I read the story on him. I said, "David, I tell you who your number one fan is." He said, "Who's that?" I said, "You." It's because he was talking about the other day he was going to be greater than Bobby Dylan. He was one of the most fantastic things on this earth, he said. He said, "Here in Nashville, nobody even cares." He said, "But in Texas, people pay money, and women pay money to just find out where he's staying and come look me up." Now, he really is a character, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
I don't know him very intimately, but I do know that he's a character. But
this is
he's got something.
This is a man who has had in his life an amazing turn of events. He was on death row at one time in the Ohio State Penitentiary. And that's a story he told me. Farron, do you know Muhammad Ali?
Yeah, I know Muhammad. Boy, he is a big man. I never realized you watch somebody on television or something, and then I walked up to this guy in person, and boy, he is a huge person and perfectly built. I mean, you couldn't have molded a man more perfectly built than Muhammad.
He tell you how great he was?
Oh, yeah. He told me that he was going to whip Joe Frazier and all this, and that's right after Frazier done knocked his block off for him, too.
Where'd you meet Muhammad Ali?
I met him down at Gleason's tournament down in Florida. And, of course, I can't mention my product back then. I was selling, but he told me I better bring a lot of them because Frazier was going to need them next time he got a hold of him, you know.
You used to. Yes, all right. Okay.
Can't mention that one.
But I just wondered how you met him. Did you just go up and say, "Hi, Muhammad Ali, I'm Farron Young"?
That's what I did. He knew who I was. From that commercial.
Did he shake your hand?
Oh, yeah.
Did he just about break yours?
No, he was very gentle with me, but Gleason came up and said, "Oh, get over here, pal. I'll whip you with one arm tied behind me." And they started scuffling, just acting silly, you know.
I've heard he has a great big hand.
He does have a big hand. He's just a big person, and he's a good-looking person. Really, he's a very handsome person.
You a fan of his?
Oh, yeah. I bet. You know, you take a guy like Muhammad, everybody wants to see him lose. It's just natural when you get to be champ. I just wish I'd have bet $1 million on him every time he fought.
People don't bet against him too often, though.
You wouldn't have lost but twice if you'd have bet $1 million on him every time.
Well, see, he lost to Joe Frazier, and he lost to
Norton.
Yeah, Norton upset him.
Right. He upset him hard. Right, he broke his jaw. I'd have been pretty upset about that, too.
One quick story, Farron. The automobile auction where you were talking with your hands.
Did I tell you that a while ago?
We didn't talk about it on the air.
Oh. Yeah, I was out here. They were auctioning cars off, and I was talking to a guy next to me. He said,
waving your hand?
Waving my hand, just talking to him. And next thing I knew, they said, "Sold to that man in the blue coat." I said, "What did I buy?" They said, "That $18,000 Rolls Royce." I said, "You got to be kidding. I wasn't bidding on that car." And lucky for me, the district attorney of Nashville was sitting there. I was talking with him, too. Well, they might have locked me up. He said, this guy was having a conversation with us.
But at an auction, you raise your finger or your hand to bid.
I wasn't even looking at it. I didn't even know what they were selling. And Cal, who owns the Weno Radio, told me, he said, you know, you're the only guy I know you can get in trouble anywhere. Anywhere.
Yeah, I think he's right. I'm only going to tell you goodbye one time. On this show one other time, I think I told you bye three times, and you finally quit telling me bye.
Well, bye, Ralph. I've been enjoyed it. It's been a wonderful week, and all you nice people that's tuned us in, we hope you've enjoyed it. And next week, Ralph will be back with another special guest star, and I'm just happy I had a portion to do with maybe some happiness in your life this week.
And Farron, this has been Country Music Month.
Country Music
We're
Month.
Still into Country Music
right.
Month. And I thank you for being our guest star.
Everybody enjoy it. There's nothing I like better than country music than you people out there that like it.
This is Ralph Emery saying so long till we see you again.
How I'd love to be around you when the lonely nights surround you. How I'd love to be alone with you. What I'd give to have the power to read your mind one hour. How I'd love to be alone with you. Just to be with you one night, you and me alone. Kiss your lips and hold it tight, have you for my own. This would be a joy unending, could be a real beginning. How I'd love to be alone with you. Be alone with you. If I only knew for certain, I'd cut out all my flirting. How I'd love to be alone with you. Just to be with you one night, you and me alone. Kiss your lips and hold it tight, have you for my own. Won't you try to be my baby, just for once and then, well, maybe I could always be alone with you. Won't you try to be my baby, just for once and then, well, maybe I could always be alone with you. And I could always be alone with you.
Well, I hope everyone enjoyed that from Farron Young, and then followed, of course, by his big monster hit, Alone With You. And let us know what you think about it. Let us know if you'd like for us to do the interviews from time to time, and what you think about it. Like to have your comments on it one way or the other, either way. Well, it's time for some comedy here on the Listener's Choice Magazine, and we've got a good one picked out for you this time. This is, you remember the pop version? It happened sometime in pop. I really don't know when it was recorded in pop, nor do I know who originated it. A lot of people have done it since then, but you remember the old thing, Baby, It's Cold Outside? I think I may have played that on a Christmas edition by Ray Charles and whatever female he did it with, and I can't remember right now. But anyway, a lot of people have done it. Well, this is a comedy version that was done by Homer and Jethro along with June Carter. And this is pretty good. I think you might enjoy this. So here is Baby, It's Cold Outside.
Get home, fellas. I can't stay here all night.
It's kind of cold out there, June.
Yep, it sure is.
I ain't a fixin' to stay.
But baby, it's cold outside.
I gotta get away.
But baby, it's cold outside.
This evening has been
hoping that you fall
very
in.
Nice.
I'll hold your hands, are just like feet.
I will start to
beautiful,
worry.
Watch your hurry.
And you'll get the shotgun
if
down.
If he does, we'll have to leave town.
Really, I'd better
have
hurry.
A drink, watch your
maybe
hurry.
Maybe just a half a jug.
Put
more.
Some Eddie Arnold records on while I pour.
The neighbors might think
But baby, it's bad out there.
Say, what's in this here drink?
That ain't sarsaparilla either.
I wish I knew how.
Your eyeballs are popping out now.
Break the spell.
I'll take your hair, your hat looks swell.
I'm gonna say no, no,
mind if we move in closer?
At least I'm putting up a good
fight. Boy, this black eye sure is a sight.
Really can't stay.
Oh, baby, don't hold out. Ah, but it's cold outside.
I'll pick it warm, Jethro.
But baby, it's cold outside.
The answer is no.
But baby, it's cold outside.
The weatherman says,
how lucky that you fell
it
in.
It would be fair.
That ain't soap chips falling out
sister
there.
Sister will be suspicious.
Gosh, your lips look like pedals.
Pedals?
Yeah, bicycle pedals.
My brother will be waiting at the
hope
door.
Hope he won't be too
and
sore.
And
gosh, your lips are delicious.
Give me the key to that
never
door.
Never such a terrible blizzard before.
I gotta get home.
But baby, you'd freeze out there.
Say, lend me a comb.
It's up to your knees out there.
You boys have been great.
We'd just like to hold
but
your hands.
Don't you see?
How can you do this thing to me?
That'll be talked to.
Think of my lifelong
sorrow. At least there will be plenty in
my life. If you caught pneumonia and died.
I really can't stay.
Your antifreeze won't hold out.
Oh,
baby, it's cold outside.
Yeah, baby, it's cold outside. I think that's kind of cute, and that's probably what some of you all were saying throughout the winter months here. It's been a pretty cold one here throughout a lot of the nation. This next song that I'm about to play, I want to say a few words about. This will start out side two, because we're just about finished up here on side one. We don't have room for another song. This is a song that, this is a request called Nobody's Darling But Mine. I'm going to play it by Charlie and Ira Louvin, the Louvin brothers. I think they do a nice version of it. It's been done by a lot of people. Gene Autry did it. Governor Jimmy Davis did it. And that's the one I want to talk about. In this song, there's a line in there where the Louvins say, "My mother is dead and in heaven. My daddy is with her, I know." Now, on the Governor Jimmy Davis version, which was recorded much, much longer ago than the Louvins version, on the Jimmy Davis version, he says, "My mother is dead and in heaven. My daddy has gone down below." And I guess at some point the recording industry decided that maybe that was a little much and it should be cleaned up. I don't know, and I don't know if anyone else said that or not, but Governor Jimmy Davis did. So this song is going out to, we're going to play it, like I say, by the Louvins, and this song is going out to Joanne in St. Louis, who requested it quite some time ago. And we're going to start out the side with Nobody's Darling But Mine, and we'll see you on side two.